Hi, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the 325th episode of Awards Chatter, the Hollywood Reporter's awards podcast. I'm the host, Scott Feinberg, and my guest today is one of the most talented, beautiful, and charming actresses of her generation. She's only 25, but she has already starred in a movie that helped to revive the rom-com genre, 2018's Set It Up, in Ryan Murphy's first TV series for Netflix, the Golden Globe-nominated and Emmy-contending The Politician, which debuted in 2019, and in one of the best-reviewed films of the first quarter of 2020, Buffaloed, a Wolf of Wall Street-esque dramedy, which she also produced, about a young hustler with big dreams, Zoe Deutsch. Over the course of our conversation at the offices of The Hollywood Reporter, the daughter of Back to the Future actress Leia Thompson and Pretty in Pink director and acting coach Howie Deutsch reflected on her journey through anxiety and bullying into show business, how she learned to stop caring, or at least to care less, about other people's opinions after starring in the somewhat divisive 2017 movie Flower. What is at the root of her chemistry with Glenn Powell, the actor with whom she starred in 2016's Everybody Wants Some and in Set It Up, and with whom she is set to reunite in 2021's Most Dangerous Game? Why she is particularly proud of her two most recent projects, Murphy's The Politician, in which she stars opposite Ben Platt and Jessica Lange, and Tanya Wexler's Buffaloed, a true star vehicle that has industry insiders buzzing, plus much more. And so without further ado, let's go to that conversation. Zoe, thank you so much for coming in and doing this. Great to have you. Always begin with just a few basics, as you may know from, I appreciate you said you've listened to this before. Where
every
were you?
Every 314, every single one.
Where were you born and raised, and what did your folks do for a living? I think you have a more interesting answer than a lot of people.
I was born and raised in Los Angeles, and my mother is an actress and a director, and my father is a director and a producer. My sister is a writer, actress, singer. My grandma was a painter. My other grandma was in music. My grandpa was in music. My other grandpa was a jazz drummer. My uncle was an actor, unfortunately.
Well, so being surrounded by all of that, what was your sense growing up of the good, the bad, and the ugly parts of this business that you eventually decided you want to get into? What was your sense just around you of, you know, what you would potentially be signing up for?
First and foremost, that it's a job, and a job that you really gotta love. You know, I think one of the great blessings and gifts of being surrounded by people in this industry is that I was given permission. Like, I knew it was possible. You know, that's a whole other element that I have to just first, you know, with nepotism and like, there's all that stuff, but really like the gift of knowing that I can do it, mm-hmm. and that it's an actual job and that it's possible to do it was very much so, again, a gift.
Did you feel that particularly your parents were encouraging or discouraging of you getting into this? A lot of people I hear, you know, the parents are in the business, they say, like, do anything else. I enjoy it, but it's like, I know how tough it can be, and I want to spare you that, or I want you to not feel like you have to exist in our shadow or whatever. Was that the sense, or was it like, you know, whatever you want to do, go for it?
I think it was pretty split. My mom was very encouraging and I think knew from a very young age that's what I wanted, that's what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. My dad, I love him to death. I'm sure he would not be pleased to hear me say this, but I don't think he was the most supportive at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Understandably so. You know, the pain and the trauma of, you know, watching his wife and go through everything that she's had to go through as an actress and then potentially having to witness his daughter in similar situations. It's that kind of pain maybe could be twofold if it's witnessing it through your child. I don't know. But I think he probably would have preferred me to be a lawyer, doctor, literally anything else.
So your sister is, what, 3 years old or something?
She's
like that?
3 and a half years older, yeah.
So did she also get into this stuff before you, or did it work in the opposite?
I'm sure my dad woke up one day and he was like, fuck, I have a daughter who's going to college for jazz vocals and another daughter who's on the Disney Channel and I end up here. What did I do wrong? Yeah, she was more focused growing up. I mean, growing up, I was very much so vying for any attention from people because my sister was just massively accomplished in so many different areas of her life. She was this champion horseback rider, like conversations of, oh, is she going to train for the Olympics? And meanwhile, I literally couldn't get on the horse. And she was this extremely talented singer, songwriter, traveling all over the world, scholarships and things. And she was just good at everything. And I was like, Maddie's little sister. And I was like, then I went into the one thing that she wasn't doing, which was acting.
Well, and that itself is kind of surprising only in the sense that I read, and I'm going to quote back to you, quote, I came into this world with anxiety. I used to hold my breath from anxiety when I was a baby and it would make me faint, close quote. So if that's an accurate quote, why would someone like that choose to get into a hobby and then a profession where you got to submit yourself to the judgment and eyeballs of a lot of other people?
Because I'm fucking nuts. And you should know that after doing how many interviews with actors. No, but that is a wild thing. It's called fainting baby disorder. And I want to talk to the doctor who came up with that really literal name. Most names, most things, disorders right. have Ambrosia. Some nuance. Yeah. There's absolutely no, there's just, it's exactly what it is. But yeah, I would hold my breath and make myself faint.
Deliberately or just by being
whenever
stressed?
Whenever I was nervous yeah. or scared or stressed. So if there was any question of if the Jewish DNA was strong in my blood, there's, you it's need not ask anymore.
Dad's side, not mom's side, right?
Yeah. But my mom's the one, you know, like all.
We'll still count. Well, you'd like to count you.
Well, I did the mikvah yeah. and I yeah. did the whole, my mom's the one who like leads the Pesach Seder and everything, wow. even though she's the okay. Minnesotan VV, not Jewish one. Where were we? Oh, well, just anxiety. Yeah. Well, I think I came to a place where my anxiety, which everybody I think suffers with anxiety, ended up becoming my superpower, not my kryptonite, mm-hmm. you know, for lack of a less lame way of saying it. It motivates me. It's the thing that gets me up and moving and going. So I'm very actually grateful for it.
What do you think generally triggers the anxiety? It's not performing in front of other people. It's something else. Or what would it be driven by?
Everything. No. Speech, anything. I'm always anxious, but that's okay. You know, mm-hmm. that's okay. You just, it's like about harnessing it and kind of chipping away at what all those little things. But yeah, I mean, I was always from a very young age, I always loved to perform. I always would put on like little plays and shows and cry when Barbie was down on her luck and when Ken crashed the dream car and, you know, whatever. I was really involved in making people feel and laugh. There's no greater feeling in the world. You know, that was a huge priority in my family is a great sense of humor. So mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah.
So it sounds like if you were having fainting baby syndrome, then the answer is yes, the anxiety does predate what I'm about to ask you about, which is supposedly you transfer schools when you're 14, skip a grade, graduate early. That's on the one hand, obviously you must be
an unbelievable bullshitter.
Well, a bullshitter or a good student or whatever it is. But that can also, I would guess, cause a little bit of like being in social purgatory because you're not really with any group consistently all the way through your childhood. Was that a fun time, middle school and high school?
Well, I did have a consistent group. My closest friends are still mm-hmm. my closest friends that I've had my whole life from elementary and middle school. Middle school is not a good time. I did have to leave my school from some classic bully situations. But
like, what are they bullying you about? I don't think you were, you know, there's the typical, like, we have an idea of what, like, the nerds are and the people that get picked on. I don't think that's what we're talking about.
No, and I've
about.
Always been very outspoken and very confrontational and very, like, don't fuck with me. Like, I came out of the womb, like, don't, you know. But, yeah, I agree. I think my mom was really shocked when she found out. It was boys. Boys were, you know, brutal.
What was that, trying to flirt or what was?
I don't know. Something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then it, you know, ended up being the best thing ever. I got mm-hmm. to go to Los Angeles County High School for the Arts, which is a public arts high school, downtown performing arts. And that was the best. I was surrounded by like-minded people, people who with purposive behavior, people that wanted so much out of life and were willing to work hard for it. That was the other thing that being raised by people that are in the business, I saw their work ethic. I saw their hustle, their drive. You got to work so, so hard, honestly.
Yeah.
And that was instilled in me at a very young age. And it was really neat to be around other like-minded people, right. Other people willing to put in the work.
And that school is a place where you are encouraged to be auditioning for professional stuff while you're in school or no?
Most kids that were working, if they wanted to work and go to school, they would go to Campbell Hall. Like the Fanning and the Olsons, like they all went to Campbell Hall, which is a school here in LA. But so it was a little tricky. And I started auditioning pretty shortly after I got into Loxa, which was, I don't think they were the most stoked about. But
who's that? The school? Or
yeah, the school.
How'd your parents feel about now, while in school still, going out for professional auditions?
I think right before then, I started to go down a pretty not great path. And I think my mother was smart enough to see that if I had something that I really cared about, that I could funnel all that energy into that rather than going down a not so great path.
Right.
So I think she was just like, okay, sure, go that way. Go right instead of left.
And what was the kind of response to you when you started auditioning at 14, 15 is a awkward age for anybody, let alone somebody who's now, again, having to be submitted for judgment by others and working professionally on top of just trying to stay above water with everything else. So what do you remember about these? I mean, because it does seem like you started working pretty quickly. I think the first thing was what you mentioned, Disney Channel, Suite Life on Deck.
Yeah, my illustrious career.
Great
and
debut.
Awards chatter.
Yes,
Suite Life of Zach and Cody. I know everyone.
And
is,
yeah. I mean, the love interest on that. I can't say I've seen all your episodes, but I read about it. And then right after that, I guess another recurring part on CW with Ringer. So what, I mean, you're working quickly. What was did that boost your confidence?
Well, it was probably not the best situation my first audition was for that Disney Channel show. First audition ever.
Really?
And I got that. And that was probably not a great thing because then the next 99 things I auditioned for, I was like, wait a minute, what am I doing wrong? I also, I haven't thought of this in forever, but I just remembered that the outfit that I wore to that audition for the Disney show, I thought it was the outfit. So I just wore it every audition. And then I think the one time after like the 99 that I didn't get that I changed the sweater, I got that one. So you heard it here first.
This
it
is
wasn't
big news.
The sweater that got me the job, but I thought it was. Anyway, no, I mean, it was interesting for your first job to be a sitcom and that kind of sitcom. It's very like, has like vaudevillian roots almost. And it's very like shticky and big and there's a live audience and, you know, sitcoms are cutthroat. A joke doesn't work at a table read, it's cut. You're live taping, no one's laughing or whatever, it's cut. Like it's an ever-changing, ever-moving, slapsticky play. And into that kind of a zone after they had been working together for 6 years, it was really, I think it was good for me. It was just, it's unlike any other type of acting. It's, you know, like there's Shakespearean, there's, you got comedy, you got drama, you got like, that kind of slapsticky sitcom-y thing is so specific to that world.
So what, you guys shot it on the Disney lot or where'd you do it?
Formosa.
Oh, okay,
yeah, I think so, yeah.
And why do you think, because I mean, you've played a lot of comedic parts. Do you think they saw, and I don't know if this part particularly was even comedic, but it's a sitcom, so I'm imagining there's probably some humor for even, you know, for all characters there. Why do you think they went for you for that first part?
Someone said something to me recently that was really interesting. They said oftentimes actors get, especially early on in their career, the type, whatever your natural defense is when you're nervous, those are the kind of parts that you get early on in your career. So when I'm nervous, I get like, it's a show, tap dance, you know, like I get super performative goofy.
Yeah.
And some people get shy and quiet, and those are the kind of parts they get, especially early on. But yeah, that's why I think that went that way.
So those two, you know, early episodic TV and then first film role, but not the last one with the first film role was not the last one that you did with your immediate family. This is a movie called Mayor Cupcake 2011. You're co-starring with both your mom and your sister. I guess is that a cool way to dip your toe into film acting, probably. Or is, I mean, it's dangerous sometimes to work with people that you're close to. You often, a lot of people end up getting divorced when they, after they've, so what was that?
Well, I can't divorce my mom or sister, unfortunately. Yeah. No. Yeah, I mean, I think what ends up happening is you have to really communicate in a different way because your boundaries aren't set. You know, when you're tired or stressed or upset, you can snap quicker if it's with people you're that close with.
Yeah. So what was looking on paper looks like it was to be the first big film role was The Amazing Spider-Man. This is 2012. And I would think at that point in your life, with only the credits that we've just talked about, that must have been really exciting. I'm going to be in this big studio movie. Who knows what that will lead to? You go in and shoot your scenes. It wasn't a big part from what I understand, but you go and do that. And then it doesn't end up in the final cut. How did
Not
you think
only
that,
that
was?
That was what was so interesting about that is that the scene that I was in, that was the scene that they chose to show at Comic-Con. Mm. So not only that, but I had all these people being like, I can't believe you're the star of Spider-Man. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
I don't even have a line. And then it got cut. But
was that
I did get to meet Emma Stone, and she was very nice to me.
Yes.
And I've since worked with her, and she has continued to be the most amazing person. I think, and I don't know if I'm getting the timeline of this right, but I think it's a couple months. But so The Amazing Spider-Man, I shot that, got cut out. And then also I got cast in this movie called Palo Alto.
Yeah.
I did rehearsals. And then the day I was supposed to start shooting, I got a call from my agent like, oh no, you're being replaced by Emma Roberts. And no one ever called me, nothing. So within that, you know, that was a jarring few months, but also, you know, that happens to, if you're in it long enough,
yeah, right.
It happens not once, not twice, but
yeah, but
know.
At the beginning of a career that can, you know, be pretty disheartening, I would think, when you don't have that perspective that shit's going to happen.
But there was never, even when those things still happen, there's never any question in my mind of if I should keep going or am I going to keep going? I just always do like that there's no room for I'm giving up. There's never been any room for that.
Because what would you do if you weren't doing this?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure, but I love what I do so much and I'm so happy to be doing what I do that, again, when shit gets bad, I'm never questioning if I should keep going,
mm-hmm.
ever.
So I think a larger audience than ever before probably saw you, largest audience up to that point, in these two movies that were sort of riding the craze of young adult novel adaptations, right? After Hunger Games and what's the other one?
Twilight.
Yeah. So now the two that you're a part of, 2013 Beautiful Creatures as sort of a supporting part, and then the first lead, I think, of your career in Vampire Academy 2014.
Yeah.
You have said, quote,
what did I say?
My first couple jobs, I did two movies where I was the love interest, and it was really, really hard because you're trying so hard to deepen it, root it, ground it into something it'll never be. Close quote. Did you find through those projects, even though they're probably, I would guess, you know, at that point, the nicer paychecks, the bigger project, you feel like this is what movies are, but that's not, you can't be that creative in a big machine type thing. Is that?
The two movies that I was referencing there were Dirty Grandpa and Why Him? Because
okay.
I was playing, and you know, this is not to discredit them. They're very enjoyable movies, but
yeah.
I am in a lot of ways, one dimensional female character in a male driven comedy, like Call a Spade a Spade. You know, that is what it is. And you can do as much work and you can write as many jokes and you can try to come in there and show up and service the story in the best way that you think you can. But at the end of the day, you can't fit a square peg into a round hole. So that's what I meant with those two.
With that
I just
quote,
realized
right.
that it doesn't matter how hard I work. That is not how my character is servicing the story, which ultimately that's your job as an actor. You're not there to do what you think. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, okay. So those two were in 2016, which I want to come to in a second because that was like, seems like kind of a big year and just the number of movies that came out that you were in. But going back to these like young adult type adaptations, you haven't done too many more movies of that sort since. Is that because that's not your cup of tea?
No, I mean, I love the look. They were both really interesting characters. Ultimately, like they in Beautiful Creatures, I played this Southern belle, bitchy, you know, manipulative, evangelical weirdo, and then in Vampire Academy, I played this intense, like, ass-kicking vampire slayer protector. So I loved playing those two parts.
Yeah,
they were fun.
All right, so 2016.
And also I got to learn, Vampire Academy was really, really special about that experience. And the thing that I take away from it is that I got the experience of learning and getting a feel for stunts and that kind of choreography. And now I'm equipped with the confidence that, you know, when I go into these rooms and I go, no, let me play
right.
Spider-Woman. And they're like, you don't. And I'm like, yes, I was a dancer for half my life. And I did this action movie that, you know, it didn't quite turn out, but I know I can do it.
Right.
I love doing it. Give me this job. You know, I have that experience. Yeah. When you walk away from all these little things and you have something new like that, yeah. then
it's worthwhile.
You can't sit there and regret. And
well, all right, just to, because you mentioned dance, was that right alongside acting all the way through as like something you were equally into and excited about? Or was that just because I didn't even know that was such a big thing for?
I loved dancing, but I wasn't that great at it.
Okay.
By that great, I mean, I think I was pretty bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, yeah, I don't think
so
that
you
was,
made the right call, which one to go.
I mean, that was never going to be a no.
No. All right. So.
Although I did have to mime in something the other, like a week and a half ago, and I sent my mom the video. I like Corey. It literally all it said was my character's an amazing mimer, and I am not an amazing mimer, but I just threw something together, and my mom, I sent her the video, and it's like a whole thing of me dancing around and miming, and my mom called me crying, and she was like, all those years of you dancing, like, you weren't great, you were actually bad, but look, it all paid off. I was like, wait, this is what you're proud of? And also, that was an insult, and like, no, mom.
That's so funny. Okay, so you mentioned two movies from 2016, Why Him and Dirty Grandpa. There were like four others that same year that came out that year. Was that a situation where something caused everybody to suddenly want to start working with you, or just one of those things where, like, I remember Jessica Chastain one year had like six movies as well, and it just happened that some of them got held up or there was something, and they all came out basically at the same time. Was that for you? It looks like that would be a breakthrough year, but maybe it was over a long period of time.
I don't know. I have no idea. I didn't even know that.
that they all came out.
There. I have no idea. Yeah, it all blurs together. No, I don't know. Yeah, there was definitely like a year though where I was never home, where I was on location the entire time. Must have been the year before that.
Yeah, right. 2015.
It wasn't that everyone was like, oh, they want to work. No, I was just auditioning and like, please hire me. I love to work and I want to work and put me to work.
So when you have those six movies come out in one year, I would guess that more than even when you were in the action movie or on Disney Channel or whatever, you're now going to have more people knowing who you are. Maybe it affects your day-to-day life when you're not working and you're just out and people start now recognizing you or knowing about you or whatever. When did that happen and how did you handle people sort of knowing about you?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
It's really felt incremental?
Yeah. I'm not really famous, so it doesn't really matter. Like, it doesn't... I'm like just a working actor. I'm just steady going, keep trucking along. And then 50 years later, I'm like, really? She's still going?
Well, so when people do, one stranger does come up to you, it's wherever it is, you know, is there a demo that it tends to be? Like, what's the demo of your...
If I'm in Europe, it's Vampire Academy.
Yeah.
Set it up is mostly what I set figuring. It up. I get a lot of...
Right.
I walk into office buildings and it's like... I feel like I'm like, they're like, thank you. You see me. Because I play in that movie. I play like an assistant, a tortured assistant.
Yes.
So I'm huge with assistants. I get like a silent nod, like, thank you. I feel seen, represented.
All right. Well, before that one came along, which I assume was probably the one that most people think of maybe first or in a lot of cases, you've talked about another one of the 2016 movies, Everybody Wants Some, as a meaningful one to get, particularly because it's Richard Linklater. It's sort of a sequel in a way to Dazed and Confused. He's discovered so many not, you know, necessarily discovered, but really helped to launch a lot of talented people from McConaughey to Affleck and on and on and on. It's you and like a zillion guys. Just watched it again last night to stay fresh on it. And is it correct to say that was like a particularly meaningful one to get to be a part of?
Yeah, I think so, for sure. And the experience, you can separate experience from outcome, you know, you can. But that one, the experience was so special and he is so special that it all sort of blurred. Like, I'm just, it was a very positive experience in general. But the audition, everything about it, he's so, it was such a, it's just different from anything else. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember I was shooting a movie in Boston, put myself on tape. And they asked if I would fly in for the day to Austin, Boston to Austin. And he picked me up at the airport, drove me to the audition. We went to lunch and then I went to the audition. And I thought I was so confident that all my improv training that I had been in my whole life was going to be so useful. And that's what he does. He just turns on the camera and he just, everyone just is. That's why all of his movies work like that. And I come to find, like, no, what's so special about him is he rehearses everything so much that the words become yours. But it's never any improv. Not a word of improv is said on that those sets. You've just rehearsed them together and made these scenes your own, that the whole thing. Yeah, that it feels
natural,
like, yeah, he's just he the best. But yes. Yeah.
Well, the guy.
On a tangent. As
no,
always.
No, it's good. The actor who you had most of your scenes with there is not the one who it seems like you ended up, you know, developing a particularly close friendship with afterwards, right? Because I think it was on that set that those seeds of Set It Up were first planted. Is that correct?
Yeah. Linklater was the first one to be like, Glenn Powell, Zoe Deutsch, you guys got to do something together. Your energy, you're both so... We were just like, spar. I don't know how to say it any other way. We were like constantly like going at each other in this very rom-com-y way. Mm-hmm. And then he was going to set it up with, I think it was, they cast Emilia Clarke.
Yeah, for a theatrical release, right?
And then MGM, I auditioned for it. When she dropped out, I auditioned and MGM did not want me. They said no. So I was like, oh, all right, well, we'll find a different one. And then it went to Netflix and... I auditioned again and it was a no. And then I was like, let me get back in there. And then I won them over. But it was a double no before it was a yes.
What, how did you change their mind? What do you remember what happened in the room? God. I guess, did you read with Glenn?
I did read with Glenn, yeah. I don't know how I convinced them. I think it was Katie Silberman who convinced everyone, the writer. Yeah. I don't know. I know she was on my side. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, so there were 2 years between the release of Everybody Wants Some and Set It Up. And so before we go any further with Set It Up, let's just go through what was going on in there.
What's in there, Flower?
Well, first, I think in terms of release dates, Before I Fall.
Oh, I love that movie.
Which is sort of like a new, almost like Groundhog Day, right? Where young...
Sad, emo, high school Groundhog Day.
I mean, I don't want to spoil it for people, but I mean, basically a girl, I mean, it's actually sort of like what's the show on Netflix now? Russian Doll, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's about a young woman who relives the last day of her life over and over and over again until she lives it right and becomes the person that she wants to be and be remembered as.
Was that your first time with a female director?
Was that my first time with a female director? Movie-wise,
yeah. Does that make a difference?
Yeah, I mean, I had such an incredible bond with Ry Russo Young. I still do. I love her. I loved that movie. I'm really proud of that movie. It came at a very, very hard time in my life. A week before I went to go shoot that, my cousin passed away suddenly. He was very young. So I was mourning while dealing with death every day. And the way that we shot that movie, because I relived the same day 7 times, we had to block shoot it. I don't know if I'm going to explain this well, but for anybody listening is a filmmaker, this was a full nightmare. Yeah. And I'll tell you why. So if we're shooting this scene right now, we would shoot my close-up of day 1, day 2, day 3, day 4, day 5, day 6, day 7, then go into the wide and I'd have to go 7, 6, 5, 4. I'd have to remember all the different ways that I played does that make,
yeah,
and then
absolutely.
I'd have to go to yours and then remember. And it was just so chaotic. And I had to like color code the days. And it was a very, very demanding, very tricky part. And I loved it. But also on top of that, my cousin, it was like a,
yeah. Crazy.
But I was very grateful to Rye because she was so loving and just a really kind captain of the ship.
It sounds like you guys only had 24 days to do all of that with all the blocking and stuff. That's not going to be a leisurely pace for that.
Yeah.
I was trying to think about it. And I think the first time that I might have seen you in anything was in Rebel in the Rye.
Oh, yeah.
Which I guess, unfortunately, because of, I think timing wise with Mr. Spacey, it didn't get very widely seen. Is that was out before, or did they have to put that out? No, because All the Money in the World was the one that came out after, and that one they had to reshoot. But anyway, the point is you're playing Una O'Neill, New York socialite, being pursued by J.D. Salinger before he's anybody, right, in this movie, which I think Danny Strong's first film directing debut. And just trying to think, like, was that period piece? What I don't know. Had you done a period piece? Because normally people are going to you for pretty like modern chicks.
I loved it just because, you know, I think what was the time? It was like I shot. Okay, I'm trying to remember. I remember at that time I was doing, so I did like a studio comedy, and then I did this tiny little weird indie flower, and then I did this sad introspective before, and then I went and, you know, like and then I did this period. I felt like I was exercising so many different muscles, which was really fun. Of course, as an actor, you're always attracted to whatever is the complete opposite of what you're doing at that exact moment. So I felt fulfilled in that way, that I was doing such different things and getting to work with my teachers on such different things. And
Flower is really an interesting movie. Just to summarize it is not easy. So tell me if this is fair.
The people in my family lovingly refer to it as the blowjob movie.
I mean,
yeah, grandma calls it that. It's wonderful, wonderful talk at the Thanksgiving table. Yeah, we're great in the blowjob movie, darling. And people are like, what?
Yeah.
What did Pam just say?
Well, so it's basically a young woman who has given a lot of blowjobs, generally in the service of entrapping adults who are bad enough to accept them, right? And so that she can then blackmail them in order to bail out her father, who's incarcerated.
And I honestly, even with that description, will say I think that's the movie I'm most proud of.
Yeah,
I don't care what people say or how offended X, Y, and Z were. That was also, I think, a turning point for me in my life, my human, my heart life, not the bullshit career life, the perception, the yada yada stuff that doesn't matter. It was a turning point where I really did not care what people thought. I was so proud of it. Because it came out and there were some people that were mad about it and they were offended by it and they were this about it. And I just was able to actually walk away from it and be still proud of myself and not change how I felt because other people felt a certain way. You know, we're so exposed and generally like I just sort of echo what other people's sentiments are about stuff that I'm in. And I, for the first time, I was like, no, I'm proud of it. And I can't say that about a lot of things. I really can't. I'm actually really proud of it.
Oh, I thought you were great in it. And it was like maybe the beginning, I could be forgetting something, but I think it was the beginning of what in some ways has been the kind of character who people, you know, people have like a screen persona that they talk about. It doesn't mean that they always play parts that are exactly like that or that conform to that, but it does seem like you've played a lot of, since then, funny characters who are hustlers of one sort or another right through to Buffalo. And that's not a bad, I mean, we can go through any actor and find patterns in their career, but I think, do you see that? Was there something about the way you played that, you know, people liked it and they're like, we got to find other things like this for her?
I think I would be remiss to not acknowledge that because my mom, who's an actress, I think she came up at a time and she got a little pigeonholed with being America's sweetheart, beautiful and sweet and loving and sexy and all these things. And so I think inherently I wanted to go the complete opposite. You know, instead of being sweet and cute, I wanted to be like, fuck you, pay me vibes. Right. Not like me, but like the characters.
The characters, yeah.
But also, please, somebody, please, I'm begging you guys.
Please
pay me. Yeah, it's time. No.
But so you think.
So I think that there was something in that, in that I witnessed her being pigeonholed in that way. And so I wanted to go the opposite. And I think in a lot of, also, there's no plan or trajectory or I want to be this or I want to be a movie or that or whatever. Like, I want to do this for the rest of my life. So how do I do that? How do I show people that I can do whatever you want me to do. I can, you know what I mean? I can, it's almost like I'm building like an arsenal of just bizarre, weird characters and okay, I'll be a character actor. I'll be a leading lady or I'll be this or whatever you, I can do it all.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to equip myself with a great defense. So when, when I'm in my, you know, whatever, and they're like, I don't know if she can do it. Well, look at this one right here.
I have done a blowjob movie before.
I have the proof. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't want in any way that to be interpreted as saying, like, that's the thing you do and not.
No.
But because the next, even that same year, 2017, is the year of Spectacular Men, which is a totally different thing. I mean, you're very funny in this also, but you sort of took a backseat in a way, almost a supporting part for a showcase that written by your sister and starring her, directed by your mom. And basically, I don't know if it's semi-autobiographical or what, it feels like it rings true for
no it's not, but we all, but the thing that was, what was cool about that movie is that we all gave each other jobs that nobody else was going to give us, like I wanted to produce. Who's going to give a 22-year-old an opportunity to produce if they're not, you know what I mean, they're, why would anyone do that? And my mom, nobody was giving my mom an opportunity to direct a movie, and nobody was giving my sister an opportunity to star and write and do the music. So we were like, let's give each other these jobs. Let's lift each other up. And I learned so much in how much I love producing. And
what are some of the, for somebody listening who doesn't really know the business, and what would those responsibilities entail?
It's interesting. Producing is such a large title. It can be, it can mean a lot of different things. It can mean finding money. It can mean creatively, like you're the person that's working with the right note wise there. It can mean, I think a great producer is somebody who there's no task too big or too small.
Right.
They'll be the person who's like, oh, the actor who's flying in from New York is staying in this, we'll find them their Airbnb. We go to the Airbnb and the shower curtain's not working. It's like, I'll hang the shower curtain, but I'll also be like, I'll call, you know, Ted Sarandos and I'll be like, watch this. It's good. You know, like there's no task too big or too small. I think that's what, in my experience, a great producer, is. They're like, it's everything with movie making. If you can push ego aside and just everybody is there to service the greater good of the project.
I mean, what was the budget? Must have been nothing.
It's less than, it was nothing. It was nothing. And we shot it in so many different states, and it was so, I mean, I promised I would never, ever, ever let anybody shoot anything in my home. Just, and no one should ever let anybody shoot anything in their home. It's an, it's a very bad idea. I had to shoot in my home for this one.
Well, I, my two cents, I thought Flower and that were, it's like, wait a minute, this is, even though it's a smaller part for you, like that was a demanding, emotionally kind of all over the place part. You had to come in a million different times and literally show up and be in and sort of, be funny when it, I remember the thing about saying to your sister, like, yeah, we'd love for you to come live with us. And you remember to flush when you poop.
Something
but
like that,
it was very, the timing, that's where I realized you have great comedic timing. Okay, so which brings us to Set It Up. So Netflix doesn't release their viewership information, but everything I've heard, and I have a lot of friends who work there, and I've read other people's, like, apparently this was a phenomenon on the service. Is that what your understanding is too, right? Right?
Yeah. She's not. I mean, it was, yes.
And so this was the thing that we were saying a minute ago. They didn't even want you in. You guys get there and...
Also, nobody was, nobody wanted to make rom-com. No actor was like dying to do rom-coms. It was like a, they did terribly. They were frowned upon. They were like kind of looked at as like they were tack. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, we were, it was one of the best scripts I'd ever read. I mean, it is. I mean, Katie Silberman obviously has gone on to, you know, do Booksmart and other amazing things. And she's truly, 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 truly brilliant.
Yeah.
But I had never read a writer who's who it just felt like she was writing for me. I was reading the script and I was like, this is written for me. I've never felt that. Like I was reading it. I couldn't stop myself from reading it out loud, which is usually a clear indication that I'm like, I gotta put me in, coach, when I'm just like already trying to, you know, figure out the rhythm and the tone. But yeah, it wasn't like a cool thing to make rom-coms.
No.
And it was surprising. It was surprising. We were all very surprised.
Well, Claire Scanlon, the director, has said that part of the concern about casting you was that the part was written to be 28 and you were 22. And I guess they tailored it a little bit to meet in the middle. I think they made the character 25 or something, but I don't know if that is something that the audience even thinks about. I mean, it either works or doesn't because of the chemistry, which was definitely there, which is interesting because just to go to the next thing, I mean, only because you've talked about this, you've basically said you have never actually been involved with Glenn Powell, like romantically. Is that correct? Because it's so believable. It's crazy, the chemistry. And I know everybody says that, right? To you. So.
Yeah, no. I mean, you know what? Chemistry is a really weird thing.
So how do you explain
it? I've made movies with people that I'm in, it's like a 6-year long relationship with, and I don't have good chemistry with them. I can't explain it. Sometimes people have chemistry on screen and sometimes they don't. It's just inexplicable. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah.
And,
but no, Glenn and I are not dating. So if that's what you're,
no, I don't mean,
no, I'm kidding.
No.
And we weren't, so we're, no.
Right. No, but that's not an easy thing to, people like dismiss sometimes rom-coms as like fluffy or whatever, but that's, to do a good one is not easy, I would think. Clearly, or they would do more.
Yeah.
But, and actually the thing that since I rewatched that one, I can't stop. I had to go track down and I asked my podcast producer to do me a favor here and find a way to rip the audio of the slowed down version of Come Go With Me for when you guys inhale the pizza, because pizza has never seemed sexier than in Set It Up. So anyway.
I ate so much pizza. Okay. Well, Glenn was eating gluten-free pizza the whole movie. Okay. Really quickly. I am always eating and everything always. And I prepare so much I'm the type of pretentious dickhead actor that's like chooses animals for each character. Like even, you know, silly comedy. Like I always am my prep work. Like I'll show you my binder for,
yeah,
like
please.
this is what my binder looks like for things that I work with.
Wow.
You know, it's just like so stupid and pretentious and like obsessed with process. And I love it all. Whatever. That being said, every part I've ever played, everyone's like, I love how much they eat. I'm like, no, bitch. That's just because I'm always hungry. And with Set It Up, yeah, Netflix had this budget for food that never before these tiny movies had. So I was like, every day, like, I think our bro will be eating Bar Pitty today. $50 bolognese. I think, like, just so, so obsessed. And so for the pizza scene, I was like, I want to do Joe's pizza. And Glenn had gluten-free pizza. And I ate so much. I did throw up. And then he had to be very close to me. And maybe that's why we've never dated. And just circle back on that question.
Right.
If we've ever. Sorry, Glenn. Yeah.
No, well, that's a lot of fun, that movie. And I'm sorry I was late to catching up on it. But so while you were doing Set It Up, I believe is when you heard about The Politician. Is that right?
No.
When did you get a script for the first time?
The Politician, no.
No.
What was I working?
No, it was Buffaloed that you got, right? Well,
yeah, I read Buffaloed when I was shooting Set It Up, and then I started to, you know, that was the journey of getting that movie made. But I don't know. I just remember that I was in New York when I was sent The Politician. And I was sent it for Astrid, for the part that Lucy plays.
Right.
And
Lucy Boynton.
And then Ben had gone to the premiere of Flower. And then the next day, I'm trying to piece it all together.
Yeah.
And then the next day, I had an audition with him. It was like a 12-page, 15.
Did you know him before that?
No, not really.
Because you guys seem like best friends.
Yeah. He has become like truly one of my nearest and dearest. Who says nearest and dearest?
Yeah,
how old am I? 90 years old? What is that? Yes, he's one of my best friends. What the fuck just happened? Goes on a podcast for 20 minutes, turns into a 90-year-old.
Gertrude.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I remember back in the day. He came to the premiere of Flower,
right.
And then the next day I had this really intense audition where I was playing some crazy bipolar something. I was crying hysterically. I didn't get the part, but he, from that moment on, was like, I really want to find something to work with you on. I really want to find something to work with you on. And he called me and he was like, did you read The Politician? And I was like, yeah, I did. And he was like, what do you think about Infinity? And I was like, I had only read the pilot. So the only had the two scenes mm-hmm. that she's in the pilot. And I was like, I don't know. I don't understand. What is it? I don't get. And he kind of tipped me off a little bit as to where the character is going yeah. and what kind of character and world this is. And then I was sold and I was like, all right, let me get Ryan to read me. Let me see if I can squeeze my way into an audition.
Because I just want to tell listeners, this is the first big project. Ryan Murphy signed a huge thing to go to Netflix. This is the first thing I think that's come out that he's done there. And so everybody had a lot riding on this, including, you know, it's the first impression for him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Okay.
And I had just saw, like, when I read this, I had just started to like get everything organized and ready to shoot Buffaloed, which is right. a movie that I've been on a war path to yes. make happen. I love this part. I love this project. I love the writer. I loved everything about it. I love this director we had hired. And we had like signed the lease for the production office in Toronto. And then I read The Politician and they were going to go at the exact same time. And I was like, what do? I can't. And my agents were like, Zoe, but, come on. Yeah. Really? But the problem was that I had to basically drop out of Buffaloed even just to audition for Ryan because he wanted you to do a test deal.
Which is what, a pretty extensive
thing. Yeah, it's like a, you know, like essentially like if you audition then and you get it, then your deal is already
yeah,
done.
Yeah.
And I was like, you can't just ask him if I can audition and we can make it work. And they were like, no, we're not going to call Ryan. And not only does he not even want you yet, you have an audition, be like, you have to work around our dates.
Right.
So my agent said no.
Right.
And so I said, actually, I talked to Glenn. Glenn had worked with him and he was like, Zoe, he responds very well to directness. Just be direct.
Yeah.
So I could probably pull up the email. I like emailed him this long thing being like, I want so badly to audition for you, give you the opportunity to see if I'm right for your vision, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't be able to come for the first month. I need to shoot this movie. I can't let these people down. And the next day I got a call that was like, yes, you can fly to New York and audition for him. And
with that understanding.
Yeah, which was, it's such a testament to how, yeah. again, he really, if you're just like direct, anyway, I'm very grateful. And yeah. so I shot Buffaloed, landed, next day came to LA and started shooting The Politician. And they're both such big, weird, wild characters, yeah, yeah. you know, in Buffaloed. I'm playing this money hungry, obsessed with getting out of her blue collar existence, kind of like a blue collar, small town female Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
Like, and then I went and did The Politician, which is this, you know, she's a chameleon of sorts. Mm-hmm. She's sick and diminutive and her psychology has been trapped at seven by her grandmother. So I, you know, very large, larger than life characters with weird voices and
well, I was gonna say, like, when you do something like, you know, you're doing the role of Infinity and you know that's gonna have a huge audience and it's, you're with a lot of other very talented actors and you have to do something so out on a limb as like the baby voice, for instance, or this wearing a bald cap or whatever, stuff that, you know, if somebody hasn't seen you before, this is gonna be, you know, it's just, it's a big choice. Is that scary to dive all in on?
No, it's fun. It's a character, you know, that, yep. that when you have stuff to do, it's fun. It's not scary. It's when you have nothing to do that it's scary. When you're left hanging, like when you have nothing to do or nothing to, there's no, when you're playing somebody that.
You have to flesh it out, I guess.
Yeah. It's again, going back to what we were saying before, yeah. which is that when you're not playing like a full human, that's when it's hard.
Yeah. The person who you have probably the most scenes with, I think even more than Ben, is Jessica Lange, mm-hmm. two-time Oscar winner Jessica Lange. You've said a few other interviews that there were some very specific things that you've kind of internalized from watching her work. What are the most valuable of those?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is her confidence in silence, in taking time in between words and filling it with her Langness. I, you know, I have younger sibling syndrome. I talk fast. Maybe because I don't feel like my words carry worth or meaning or whatever. I talk fast. I act fast. You know, I do all these things to try to keep people entertained and engaged out of fear that I'm what, not enough. We all feel that way in some capacity. Maybe not. Probably. I don't know. Can't speak for you. Can speak for me. But I just loved that watching, you know, somebody with that much talent and experience and confidence just take a breath. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, no, it's interesting because do you think that any actor can get away with their own pacing like that? Or is it because you have to earn that being nobody's going to fuck with Jessica Lange?
I didn't know this, but apparently I was fucking with her and maybe that's why she liked me. But Ryan told me in the story that like, apparently, cause I, even though I like prep really hard, I play, I really do. I just go for wild shit. Mm-hmm. And I like, and apparently Ryan was like, and there's a scene in the pilot where we're in Olive Garden and I like shoved a breadstick in my mouth and we started doing an improv about it. And Ryan said he looked to the script supervisor like, should I stop? So like, is that Jessica going to get mad? Like, should I stop her? And because he thought I was fucking with her, which I totally wasn't. Right. But I'm glad she didn't think that I was because we developed a really wonderful friendship and it's one of my favorite. Yeah, it's like one of my. She's hilarious. One of my favorite, just my favorite people in general.
Yeah.
But, I guess I didn't mean to fuck with her. No.
Okay, so that first season began rolling out, and I think in between that and this weekend with Buffaloed was Zombieland, Double Tap.
Zombieland.
10 years after the first.
That's the most fun I've ever had ever shooting a movie. Ever.
A lot of other young actors, right? Same crew from the first one.
Yeah.
So that's Emma, Jesse, who else?
Woody Harrelson. And Abigail Breslin.
Right. So that was a big studio movie that comes out in between these two things. And then this past weekend, Buffaloed, I don't know, it wasn't in that many theaters yet, but it's done tremendously. Like reviews have been almost uniformly, I think, great. New York Times critics pick. All kinds of other stuff. You know, you passingly mentioned this a few minutes ago, but like, it's not like a for-hire job where you just show up and not that you ever just phone it in, but like you had to talk about how early on you were involved with this right through to this moment.
Yeah, from the very, very beginning. I read it and I started working with Brian Sacca on the script a little and then with Brooke Davies, who's the producer, and Elizabeth Grave and Mason Novick, and then, you know, try to find our director and find the money. Found the money. Now we have our director. Now it's, you know, it was something like that, of just getting it made, which is a real hustle. But
you remember the budget?
I do. I'm not supposed to say, but it was very small.
I figure, no.
I do think it's funny when I go to Q&As or when I go to festivals. I'm sure you experience this all the time with filmmakers where it's almost like it starts to be like people brag about how little money they had. Like, oh, yeah, you only had $1 million? Well.
I literally have this. We do this panel at AFI Fest called the Indie Contenders panel every year.
Yeah,
and
I go
right down the line and I'm like, all right, how many days?
And they're
how
like,
was your
I had
budget?
A piece of floss,
that's pretty much.
Two shoes, and my dog. That's it. That's all right. I had.
Kerry Washington won this year because they did for Netflix the film version of her Broadway show, American Son. And I think they did it in like 3 days because they just shot the show. It was insane. But that's the only amount of time they'd have. Anyway, it's a tangent. So Buffalo, why were you so passionate about it? Was it?
I just loved the part. I loved ultimately also that it's a, she goes against typical feminine expectations. She embodies a feminist ideal. She is refusing to exist in the way that her mom or the other women in her life have been. And she wants financial independence, which is something that I can relate to at a very young age. I was obsessed with being financially independent. I remember having to ask my parents for money for a birthday present for my sister when I was like six, and it was the worst. I was like so disgusted by myself. But one of the interesting things that the interesting gifts of kind of, you know, learning the producerial side of it is that it's just made me, I think, a better performer. Like one of the things that's it's so interesting about acting is that, like, you know your kitchen backwards and like, right, you know, if you closed your eyes and someone was like, go find the fork or go find the, you know, the garlic salt from 30 years ago that you still have, like you would be able to find it, right?
Right.
You know your kitchen. As an actor, you don't get to be in your space. You don't get to be in that kitchen in that scene until like 10 minutes before, usually, unless you're working with like Richard Linklater where he brings you to the space or whatever.
Right.
generally speaking, you don't get to. But when you're producing and you're scouting and you get, like, I had the gift of being able to have access to those things and those spaces and my kitchen. And then I loved it. Like, I think all those details, all those little things, they make me a better performer. I'm better with more information than less, for sure. And I love it. I really do.
And a lot of good but those actors little... in there with you. Judy Greer's always stood out. And yeah. Okay. So wrapping up, looking forward.
I'm quitting.
You're quitting. This is your final.
Yeah, I wanted to say goodbye to Hollywood. I take back what I said earlier, right, which is that you never give up. I am right. giving up. But I thank you for the free boxed water. It's been good, it's been Hollywood real. Reporter.
No, but all right. So there's...
thank you for the nice reviews and the bad ones too.
We're gonna go track down the people.
I literally know every person here. I'm so psychotic, you guys. To anyone listening, I'm unwell. I read every tweet, every comment. I was saying earlier that the greatest day of my life was when the IMDb message boards were taken down. Anyone who says that they don't, they're lying.
Okay, well, let's talk about IMDb for a second, because let's according to IMDb, you have, and I know it's been reported elsewhere, the one upcoming project that's listed, at least on the non-IMDb Pro, which I have not logged into recently, is something called Most Dangerous Game. Who might that involve as you do gymnastics with your eyebrows?
Yes. Katie Silberman, who wrote Set It Up, mm-hmm. and Booksmart, and right. Glenn Powell,
right.
who...
You never dated.
Who I never dated.
Yeah.
Sounding suspiciously like I did now that we've mentioned it a bunch, but I haven't. Or have I?
Well, so this is not the same characters from Set It Up?
No.
It is a rom-com, though.
Yes.
Did you ever talk about a sequel directly to Set It Up?
Yeah, I think if there was, it would be further down the line.
So it could happen.
It could, but it's not this.
Not on the books.
No.
So what, can you tell us anything about this?
It's called The Most Dangerous yes. Game. It's a rom-com, and it's not a sequel to Set It Up.
And it's going to be on Netflix mm-hmm. in 2020 or 2021, I think. I saw it listed both numbers at different places, so I don't know.
2021.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you got The Politician still, yeah. season two.
I'm flying back tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
To shoot
How
that.
Far into it are you?
Almost done.
Almost done, wow.
Uh-huh.
Last question. If the rest of your career had to resemble that of someone else who came before you, whose would you most want it to resemble?
Oh my gosh, this is hard. Reese Witherspoon, or Katherine Hepburn. But obviously, if I didn't say that, then I would be banned from all actor land in general.
What about, I just want to mention a name that comes up a lot when people have talked about or written about, just again, that screen persona. It's sort of like, I think, embodied with Set It Up, where it's like, I will not be defeated. It seems like that's the common theme with a lot of these characters. That, and it can be played for comedy, it can be played for drama, but if that's the screen persona, the thing that person who comes up a lot is Lucille Ball. Now, yeah. It doesn't mean you want to do TV.
No. I mean, of course, she's the greatest of all time, for sure. For sure.
But it is a rare thing to be able to, I mean, so do your friends, like just out in life, think are you funny in real life?
No, I'm not. I don't know. What if I was like, yeah, I'm fucking hilarious. Yeah, I'm pretty much a no. Also, Emma Stone. I think Emma Stone has just the best career, and she's just such an asshole. No, I'm kidding. She's such an amazing person, and she like smells good too, which is great.
It's important.
She really does smell good. Not that I'm like always checking, but usually like you know.
You're sniffing a lot of what was it was in Buffalo. Because I've watched again a lot of these in a very short amount of time, so they're starting
they're
to blur.
They're all melding together.
But was it Flower or Buffaloed where I think it's Buffaloed. You're like kind of sniff a few different times somebody's shirt.
Totally possible.
While you hug them.
Totally possible.
Why would that be?
I think the animal was a bear.
Oh, so that might.
So maybe it was doing something like that. I don't know. I forget these things, but told you I'm a psychopath.
It's very olfactory. That's the word, right? anyway, thank you so much for doing this.
No, and, thank you.
Fun to chat.
Thank Appreciate you it. So much for having me.
Thanks very much for tuning in to Awards Chatter. We really appreciate you taking the time to do that, and would really appreciate you taking a minute more to subscribe to our podcast for free on iTunes or your podcast app. and to leave us a rating as well. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can reach me via Twitter at twitter.com/ScottFeinberg. And you can follow all of my coverage between episodes at thr.com/TheRace. Finally, be sure to check out the other podcasts that are part of the Hollywood Reporter's podcast network, all of which are excellent. Leslie Goldberg and Daniel Feinberg's TV's Top 5, Seth Abramovich and Chip Pope's It Happened in Hollywood, Carolyn Giardina's Behind the Screen, and Josh Wigler's Series Regular. On behalf of all of us at The Hollywood Reporter, thanks for tuning in.